You know the old saying from the huddle, right? You know, it's when you get behind on the scoreboard and the coach will say something like, you can't get it all back on one play. That's true, but you want to get back as much as you can in one play, right? Well, Corn did a nice job today of getting back about half of what it lost last week.
Live from a taller Corn state of mind via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll talk with Garrett Toy from Ag Trader Talk. And in the final segment, Kerry Artak from Artak Advisory. And right after the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Hey, Davis. All right. Thank you. Yeah.
Hey-ho, buddy. Yeah.
It's a taller corn state of mind than what it was yesterday at this time. I'll guarantee that.
It certainly is. It feels like the corn is like growing by the moment here.
I don't base
that on any degree of observation whatsoever. I'm just assuming by looking outside. I mean, you know, air conditioner keeps clicking on more frequently than usual. So something's going on.
Well, I tell you, we're about maxing out on potential today. 86 degrees here in Northeast Iowa. We've got some moisture in the ground in Northeast Iowa. But I will tell you, I did a little driving around Eastern Iowa, and yesterday afternoon when it was mid to upper 80s, there was some light stress was showing up in some areas, some lower areas that might have had too much water on them early this spring.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit on hillsides. We're seeing some stress show up, very light at this point, but it's rapidly becoming one of those summers that even in areas that have gotten rain, and, you know, I know I'm saying this after Minnesota just got swamped this morning.
Right.
But even in areas that have been getting rains, we're going to need those timely rains to keep coming to help this corn crop along. So fortunately, we've got those hot or warmer than normal or hotter than normal temperatures that are in the forecast for us. But at least we've got some chances for showers that are coming along with it. And
how hot's it going to get, Chip? Did you mention?
See, now you're just making me hungry.
No.
Isn't that bacon sizzling?
This is the heat baking down. Different kind of bacon.
Right. That's a whole different kind of bacon. All right, we've got Garrett coming up today. I'm looking forward to the conversation. As always, we'll get you ready for tomorrow's quarterly grain stocks report and the acreage report from USDA. All right, man, what you got in the news?
Well, Chip, price strength in the grain markets started with corn futures, but at least wheat was a willing participant in today's price advance. Yeah. Traders continue to point to the U.S. and Russian wheat harvests as a source of hedging pressure on prices. Today's first notice day against the July contracts may have provided the support needed to erase chart-based selling interest, at least for a while. Export inspections of wheat in the week ended June 25 totaled just over 515,000 metric tons. That lined up with trade expectations. September hard red winter wheat, 8¾ cents higher, 436.5. September soft red wheat jumped 10¾ cents to 486.5. That's enough of that. Because September spring wheat, penny and a half lower, 497. Right. Chip, couldn't complete the hat trick.
Yeah, right. But the spreading's going on in that market. I'm not opposed to that. There's activity in there. There's volatility in the wheat market. There's reason for traders to trade those markets when they're spreading.
Short covering ahead of the first deliveries against July corn futures also helped to provide support for corn, as did position evening ahead of tomorrow's quarterly grain stocks and June acreage reports from USDA. Professional trading funds are still loaded heavily on the short side of the market, and with the weather forecast pointing to above normal temperatures through the middle of the month, traders may be starting to move to the sidelines. Export inspections of corn in the weekend of June 25 were at the top end of trade expectations and totaled nearly 1.235 million metric tons. September corn futures 9½ cents higher at 328¾. December corn jumped 9½ cents to 334¾. March corn closed to 345½ up ocho and ¾ cents today. Chip,
I tell you what, it's more fun to be on the afternoon show when we're doing the corn conga than not. No doubt about that. So good performance today. We've still got about half of last week's losses out there that we're dealing with, though. We can't forget that. It's a good day, but it's really just a good start.
Well, Chip, professional trading funds are net long in soybean futures, so today's exit from short corn prices positions may have also triggered some long liquidation in bean positions. Bean futures may have traded on the defensive today with the average trade guess for bean acreage at 84.7 million. That's up 1.2 million acres from March planting intentions. Export inspections of soybeans in the weekend of June 25 were at the low end of trade expectations and tallied nearly 325,000 metric tons. August soybean futures a penny and a half higher, 861 and a half. September beans firmed a penny to 858 and a quarter. November bean futures closed at 861 and a half. That's up a quarter cent today, Chip.
Yeah, look at everything that you've talked about already. We've got first notice day that you've mentioned. We've got the forecast, the weather forecast that has been mentioned. We've got Russian wheat prices and Russian wheat crop and the U.S. wheat crop. We've also got the weekly crop progress and condition reports that are coming this afternoon. We're just throwing a lot of stuff at these markets today, and it felt like a get-to-the-sideline day.
October cotton was 13 points lower at 60.13, and December cotton firmed 13 points to 59.63. And on the livestock side, we've got August live cattle futures 45 cents higher, 96.47 and a half, and Dease cattle up 70 cents, 103.77 and a half. August feeders turned sharp early losses into solid gains, 90 cents higher today, 133.50. And August lean hogs 32 and a half higher, 48.45. Dease hogs up a dime, 49.90. Chip.
All right, thank you very much. Let's bring in Jack Scoville, the Price Futures Group. How you doing, Jack?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Doing just dandy. Nice performance in corn today. Give you a little hope for the rest of the week, or do you read too much into one day?
Well, it's hard to read too much into one day, but it was a very positive performance. And, you know, just maybe we've made a little bit of a low in through here. We've kind of turned the trends back sideways a little bit. That gives us hope that we can maybe put a few more cents on this rally here.
Yeah.
Going into the end of the week, we're going to need some help though. The market is heavily oversold, but to get it much higher, we're going to need some weather or something like that to trigger this thing.
I was just going to ask you, are you watching the acreage report, the quarterly grain stocks report, the crop condition report, or the weather forecast most closely?
Well, I'm probably watching the weather forecast most closely.
Okay.
I'm going to keep an eye on the grain on the stocks report just to see how much demand destruction we really did have in the previous quarter. That's going to be important moving forward. We're probably just going to have a pretty ample supply, and that's going to keep any rallies kind of on a limited extent. But if we can burn up this crop a little bit here, then it really doesn't matter. The acreage report, I think, is pretty much discounted by the trade. Unless there's a huge surprise there, I don't think we'll pay much attention to it.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those days that we need to keep in focus, though, because a year ago on the acreage and quarterly grain stocks report, 40-plus cent trading range in corn futures that day. So it's one of those days that can trigger a big move, right?
Oh yeah, no. These are big reports. These are important reports, and there will undoubtedly be a big move in both directions. And probably within 5 minutes of each other. As well.
Exactly. Jack, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week. We got Garrett Toy, Egg Trader Talk, up next on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize American Farmland Trust for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us this afternoon. I'm your host, Chip Flory. It was a good enough day in the corn market that we got to hear the conga when Davis was doing the prices, 8-9 cents higher there. Soybeans, just call it a penny, penny and a half higher. Soybean meal was lower. Soybean oil worked to the upside. Winter wheat futures worked to the upside. The spring wheat futures, the July contract was a penny and a half lower. September wheat in Minneapolis was a penny higher at 5.09¾ today. Slight gains in live cattle and feeder cattle. Lean hogs also worked to the upside today. Milk futures, July contract up 55 cents, 22.19. The August contract up 15 cents at 19.22. So some big moves in milk futures again. Okay, Garrett Toy, Ag Trader Talk, First Commodities, joins us right now. Garrett, it is good to talk with you again. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, Chip. How are you?
Good, good, good. How's things over your way?
You know, we just had a shower go through. In fact, I had to run home from the office because it was enough to knock out our internet. So we have the little pop-up showers, and you know, we're sitting good on moisture. Our corn doesn't look, it's uneven, you know, and I've had a lot of conversations with agronomists in the area. I think we're paying some sins of the last harvest, of the wet harvest the last couple of years. You know, we really kind of struggled, you know. I mean, a lot of guys have had to do some replant on some holes. You know, and back in the day, you know, back in high school when we used to run an 8-row cultivator, you know, it's you know how corn would pop after you cultivated it because you get oxygen in the soil. You know, that's kind of what the side dressing, being able to open up that soil, I think kind of helped things a little bit. Plus, we've had a little bit of moisture that's helped the color at least, but it's sure uneven around here. We're definitely not in that garden spot of eastern Iowa, you know, at all, you know, but it's going to be okay, you know.
Yeah.
Beans look awesome. The beans look fantastic around here, but the corn is just meh.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we can't forget it's the end of June on these beans. I feel like they could be just a touch further along than what they are. I really do. I don't know. Maybe I'm expecting too much out of it, but I'm just thinking the colder temperatures that we had at the start of the season might have slowed things down just a little bit on the beans too. I don't know.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, I think, you know, the 15-inch row stuff is starting to canopy. I mean, that's kind of where we're at this point around here. You know, there's some guys that still do 30s around here that obviously, they're good color though. I mean, I really can't complain. The beans have looked awesome. It's just the corn, you know, I mean, we're better than last year obviously, but it's just, you know, it's nothing to write home about for us around here, at least this neck of the woods.
Yep. You know, that question that I asked Jack after I asked it, I figured out how much I really liked the question. So I'm going to ask you too, as we get started here, what are you focusing on most right now? You've got choice between crop progress and condition, quarterly grain stocks report, acreage report, and the weather forecast.
You know, crop conditions hardly ever matter to me. The only thing that I'm watching, everyone anecdotally or anybody that's driven through Iowa says the crop is fantastic. You know, the only thing that sticks out to me in crop conditions is that Iowa crop conditions and corn and beans are the best since 94. Well, we knew what happened in 94, don't we?
Right.
You know, I mean, so the potential is there, you know. I think the big thing is weather over the next 2 weeks. I mean, obviously, the stocks report can throw a monkey wrench into anything. You know, the acres, I agree with Jack. I don't really think the acres are going to much of anything in the grand scheme of things. I mean, everyone's kind of more focused on the demand sort of thing and where are we at on this COVID reopen shutdown, progression. You know, I think that's more a thing. But I think near-term focus is more on weather the next 2 weeks, and it looks like it's going to be hot.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised that 97 is, you know, USDA's prospective plantings report number, based on survey from farmers. I'm a little surprised that is right at the top of the guess range going into this acreage report. I mean, I know what happened up in North Dakota, but I also know what happened in Iowa. And I know that when we plant corn crop as quick as we did in Iowa, sometimes a few acres show up that that we didn't expect. And it doesn't take much of a swing in Iowa to offset lost acres in North Dakota.
Sure does. Sure does. You're exactly right. You know, and you got to remember that, you know, that the March report, you know, told us, you know, implied, you know, record Western Corn Belt acres, you know. So, you know, even, you know, I think the interesting thing about the trade estimate, as far as like the trade setup, is that you've got like a 4 million acre trade guess on the corn acres numbers. But everything else, like beans, the bean range is historically tight. The wheat range is historically tight, which, we know the winter wheat numbers, you know, fairly well.
Yep.
But, you know, it's like everyone is unsure of the corn numbers. But if somebody misses the corn numbers, there's going to be some trickle down effect somewhere, you know, it's going to screw up that bean number, or it's going to screw up something. So there's going to be, there at least should be, you know, something tomorrow that could create some excitement. But, right. You know, you look at historical volatility. I mean, vols in all the grain markets are lowest since 2010, out of 2010. You know, there's just no fear in this market right now.
Yeah. You know, I like the fact that just looking at the average trade guesses for corn and soybeans, that the combined total is now under 180 million acres. It's 100,000 under 180 million acres, but at least I feel like it's going in the right direction. I could still take a million and a half off of that, Garrett, and I'd feel a whole lot better about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to take a stair-step approach. You know, I think that, you know, if you look at the record Western Corn Belt planting that they surveyed, we've got the prevent plant in the northern, you know, the northern plains. You know, and we could pick up some acres elsewhere because we had such a good – I think there's probably 1.3 million acres, you know, at risk in the west – 1.3 million acres of corn at risk in the Western Corn Belt. And, you know, in the Eastern Corn Belt, we, you know, probably could pick up some stuff here as well, you know. So, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, the historical drop from March to June is a million acres. You know, I think the interesting thing, we've done some price analysis that, you know, based on March 1st prices and June 1st prices, is that, you know, if there's a surprise, maybe it's that bean acres don't increase as much as possible because they are not typically as price sensitive for whatever reason in this June report. So, you know, I think, you know, corn acres probably come down 1 to 1.5 and beans may pick up a half to one and that's where we're at. So,
Okay. I like that. You know, it's also interesting that when we started the conversation, you said that the grain stocks number could throw a wrench into the works, and force some price action in here, but I don't think you really expect that the acreage number to do that.
No, it's going to come out. I mean, basically what we're really looking for, I mean, they're, you know, I think based off the trade guess, you know, there's some bullish numbers already kind of baked into the feed and residual number for tomorrow, given the trade. But I, what we're really watching for is how is the farmer sitting? You know, I mean, you know, in that March 1st stocks report, the farmer's doing an excellent job of moving grain. You know, they were right at the five-year average on farm stocks at 55%. Well, tomorrow should show us if we're going to maintain that percentage, we should be at 50% on farm, you know. And if that number deviates, then that tells us that, you know, the ethanol shutdown, the COVID issues, you know, got the farmer behind on sales. That typically will impact the Southeast corn spread in here for the most part. You know, near term, especially with, you know, as strong as the corn spreads have been at these levels, and we know that, you know, obviously that the farmers, you know, relatively undersold. You know, we don't have, I don't think anybody's real happy with their new crop sales, or, you know, they're the only amount they've got sold for a new crop, you know. So that's kind of what we're watching for here, and I think what the commercial's watching as well.
Okay, so you've got your demand slow down, but there's also that, just, you know, the cash flow needs. There was, every time we turned around, it seems like there's been a check coming that delays the need to clean out a bin and get cash flow going again. It feels like we're just kicking this movement down the road.
Yeah, and the spreads kind of tell you that is too. I mean, we've inverted the March-May. We inverted the May-July. You know, we traded, you know, July SEP up to a penny and a half here today. You know, I mean, that tells you it at least along the deliverable, the river, which, you know, it closed down, you know, day after tomorrow. It's essentially shut down now, but it tells you the commercial, at least in the Eastern Corn Belt, just doesn't have any ownership. You know, otherwise they put stuff out on the river and deliver it, you know. And that's a function of, you know, the subsidy payments and these low prices. They're just not levels that are attractive. But it's clock ticking, you know. We've got to get through pollination, our typical seasonal.
Hey, we got to go to the break. I can't believe the music's playing already, but we got to get to break. We're talking to Garrett Toy, Ag Trader Talk, right here on AgriTalk. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers first thing today. Some heat and dryness heading into July. The National Weather Service outlook for July 4th through the 8th is hot across the Midwest and Plains with a band of dry weather stretching across the bulk of the Corn Belt. We'll take a look at the update at the end of today's show. In the week ahead, in addition to USDA's acreage and grain stocks report on Tuesday, we get a big jobs report on Thursday. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar warned that the U.S. is running out of time to combat the spread of the coronavirus. I hope we don't run out of time on that. U.S. exporters signing safety declarations rather than China's coronavirus-free certification letters. And finally, the monsoon has spread across all of India. Hey, if you want to see everything that Pro Farmer has to offer, go to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
You know, there's one more headline that I wanted to get to there real quick. ARC and PLC sign-up deadline for the 2020 crop year is tomorrow, June 30th. I know that most of you have already taken care of that, but if you're out there and it slipped your mind, you've got until tomorrow to get signed up for the ARC and PLC programs. Okay, let's take a quick recap of how the markets closed today. September hard red winter wheat futures, 8¾ cents higher at 436.5. September SRW jumped 10¾ cents to 486.5. September corn futures, 9.5 cents higher, 328¾. December corn, 9.5 cents higher, 334¾. August soybeans, 1½ cents higher, 861.5. November beans closed at 861.5, up ¼ cents. October cotton up 13 points. August live cattle futures, 45 cents higher at 96.47.5. August feeders, 90 cents higher at 133.50. And August lean hog futures, 32.5 cents higher at 48.45. Okay, let's get back to the conversation with Garrett Toy, Ag Trader Talk. Garrett, before we get to these reports and getting set up, during the break, I'm wondering, is there, what is it? What is it about the trade that's happening in the grain markets right now that you like, that you see setting us up for something better later?
No, that's a good question, because I'm typically negative Nancy here. I think there's some opportunities. I mean, I would really like to see a good 20-cent rally in the corn market, get back these corn back to 350, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, I think, you know, and Jack mentioned that he thinks, you know, or said something about, you know, don't get caught up in a one-day affair sort of thing. In reality, today's price action is strictly a function of last week's option expiration, in my opinion. Because you look at you know, we had a huge breakout in the soy-corn ratio last week. You know, the new crop soy-corn ratio, we traded to 265. We gave all that back. We gave all that back today, you know. And it looked like, you know, that soy-corn ratio, you know, was going to trade back above 2.7. And we've only had 4 years where we've had that trade above 2.7. And I'm a bean bull. You know, I mean, I think that beans, you know, and this is, I'll sound either really smart or really dumb after tomorrow's numbers, you know, what the acres are. But I mean, I think that, you know, you look at the Chinese crush numbers, you look at the internal pork prices, you know, I think their crush is coming back. I think the demand is there. I think a little bit more firming in the real, creates more opportunity for U.S. beans. I'm not for one, obviously you have to be cognizant of the, you know, rhetoric coming out of Washington and Beijing. But, you know, you look at, you know, one thing that we really track is China is buying U.S. goods,
yeah.
and it's commodities that are value to them. You know, you look at sorghum. You know, sorghum's yep. a huge indicator for us. You know, China's buying 95% of our total export commitments. You know, they're buying stuff. It's just even though they're not buying stuff now, it's just because the timing's not right. Now, if right. we have 96 or 95 million acres of corn and a 165 yield, you know, and we have fairly cheap new crop prices, I think they'll be there. And then that again lessens, you know, some of the negativity of the new crop corn values. Okay. You know, you read some of the rhetoric that's coming out of China, how they've gone from, you know, seller's markets to buyer's market this year. You know, you just kind of read it. And then you look at, you know, the demand that they've had for the reserve auctions. You know, at some point here in August, in mid, you know, August or September, those reserve auctions are going to run out. You know, so that's right. really, you know, when we get a new crop values, that's when we'll kind of tell. So to answer the original question, I'm a soy corn ratio bull in here for near term. You know, I think that we can probably, you know, if depending on tomorrow's numbers, I think we can probably get the ratio back above 2.7 at some point. Just because I think that, you know, the ASF issues are fairly well subsiding. And the Chinese, you know, demand is there. The USDA is at the 94-95 import number for China, which is where I think they should be. So I mean, I think that, you know, I think the demand is there for soybeans. We just have to, you know, have a crop. I mean, look at these new crop river values out here for beans.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you've been paying much attention. I mean, I did a basis contract for November for, I think, 200, you know, November delivery, you know, for November delivery, you know, and that's unheard of, you know. So, I mean, there's some pretty decent new crop, you know, basis values out here for beans on the river. So
there's always an opportunity if you look for it, isn't there?
Absolutely. Yep. You know, and that's the one thing that we've kind of been, you know, we advance sales. I'm a strong seasonal guy. We advanced farmer sales here 2 weeks ago. You know, and we want to get into pollination. You know, we want to look at advancing hedging in here, because the one point that, you know, I'm trying to reach out to guys or make is that, you know, mitigating losses is also risk management, you yep. know, because, you know, if we don't have a weather event, we have a nice rally here today. We're back to basically what I call today a midday comments, the scene of last week's crime, 326 July, 335 East Corn. But if we can build on this a little bit, you know, advanced sales, the only way you're really going to dig yourself out of it is selling some 21 stuff to try to, you know, dig out of these holes. But, you know, mitigating losses is also risk management, because if we don't have a weather event, if we have 97 million acres tomorrow, if we have a COVID issue that pokes its head out of here again, I don't see how corn can be sub $3 at harvest, you know, and that's my big concern, you know, and I, you know, if that pushes that ratio above 8.7, where beans are an $8.75 to $9 ticket item, you know, we'll see what basis does from there on out. But that's kind of in the back of my mind. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay. No, that's good. That is really good. Hey, talking about those reserve auctions on corn in China, they've been 95% plus of sales for the last few weeks in here. Hey,
like 99%. They sell on everything.
Yeah, 99. I was going to say 99%, but the that tells us that their demand, not just for beans to crush, but for corn for feed, that hog herd over there has got to be coming back, right?
It sure looks like it, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing about the reserve corn, they can't use it for ethanol because of the quality. So, I mean, it's because of the quality issues, that, you know, it limits some of the participants. So, I mean, it's, you know, the science point to that's coming back. Now, I mean, the only problem is we've had, you know, we've been crying wolf on China corn, you know, corn yep. imports for forever. So, I mean, you know, it's just kind of one of those things. Are they going to buy corn now? But no. But if things get cheap enough, will they buy it? You know,
yes.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
and
the import market is. Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, when we're talking about Chinese feed imports, if we don't watch out, they'll run us out of exportable supplies of sorghum, won't they?
It's come close in the past, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a good one to watch. Now, one other thing that I want to follow up on, and you pretty much answered it already when you mentioned something about looking at 2021 corn. What is the window that you're willing to work with right now, Garrett? How far out might you go?
Well, I mean, when we were trading, calendar years?
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about 22 stuff?
Yeah.
You know, I don't have any problem with it. You know, I mean, you could probably, you know, 370, you know, if you look strictly from a cash marketing standpoint or a flat price marketing standpoint, I mean, these 22 corns, 376, you know, and you have to have again, 96 million acres or whatever it may be tomorrow, you know, a 3.2 to 3.3 billion carryout, it's going to take, you know, not just one, but probably two weather events in order to start whittling those numbers down. You know, $3.76 to $4 is the honey hole, you know, and in theory, if we have a big carryout, the spreads are going to be wider this year. You know, from a 376 standpoint, with some rolls, you know, basis improvement, assuming wider spreads, you can make that work. You know, I mean, it's a profitable level, and you can make it work.
Gotcha. Okay, so just kind of to summarize what we're talking about, you can see this bean market working to the upside, but corn's going to have to get drug along.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, that's what the USDA has been telling us all along is that, you know, you look at the on-farm price for beans, it's well below where it should be given the stock-to-use ratio. Mm-hmm. You know, and the USDA is telling us that corn's going to be, you know, corn's going to be an issue for soybeans, you know, all year. But, you know, with the real firming and what's happening in South America, the policy changes and whatnot, you know, we might not have as reliable Argentina here from, you know, that we've had over the last 5 years because of their regime changes down there, and then the real strength, obviously. You know, it should provide some opportunities in here. I mean, I think, you know, do I think the beans are going to trade much above $9? Tell me what the weather is going to be in August. but I mean, that's probably, in my opinion, going to be the top end of the range here in your term.
Gotcha. It's all good stuff, man. Hey, thanks for making time for us today, Garrett. Really appreciate you.
Yep, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Good deal. That is Garrett Toy from Ag Trader Talk First Commodity. Okay, just real quick, I want to hit you with this. When we look at the average trade guesses going into tomorrow's reports on acres, corn, 95.2 million, soybeans, 84.7 million, all wheat, 44.7 million. And then in the quarterly grain stocks report, we are looking at corn stocks of 4.951 billion, bean stocks, 1.392 billion, and wheat stocks of 980 million bushels. We'll be back with Kerry Artak next.
Chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back. Glad that you could be with us today. Yeah, I remember this, Doug. I just got a reminder email from a listener, Doug. Doug is in Missouri, and he was making mention here. What's his original email? Dated June 22nd. Week ago, that there were some attractive basis levels out there for new crop soybeans. So, yeah, pay attention to that. And thank you, Doug, for sending that message and for sending the reminder. That's good stuff, man. Okay, let's bring in Kerry Artak. Artak Advisory is with us right now. Kerry, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Chip. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Let's get started with corn. What do you see?
Yeah, well, we're trading December now as lead contract. Slightly different numbers. We had a nice rally today, but it's merely testing a long-term resistance area at 336 and three quarter. We closed 2 cents lower at 334 and three quarter. In this area, 336 and three quarter can contain buying into later summer, and below which 307 and three quarter is likely over the next few weeks, and we could fall as far south as 290 even into August trade, where I would expect the broader corn market to bottom out into autumn trade. On the other hand, if we can close Friday, the week itself, above 336 and three quarter, that should sustain a bullish dynamic well into July, the next 3 to 5 weeks, then allowing 362 half, where the broader market encounters long-term resistance able to contain buying into next year, actually, and below which we still maintain kind of a long-term sell signal below 362 half. So a side note that we really do need to settle above 362 half in the coming months to neutralize what I consider to be a heavy market into next year. Okay. On to November soybeans, 890 even. We settled at 876 and a quarter. 890 even is our ceiling through summer. That actually can contain buying over that time horizon, below which 852 even is likely over the next few weeks and the next several months, allowing 773 even long-term support. You know, and so on that note, if the market did close the week Friday below 852 even, then 773 even likely in as little as 3 to 5 weeks, where the broader bean market can bottom out through the balance of the year. Now, upside, if Nov beans can close Friday, the week itself, above 890 even, then a decidedly bullish dynamic would be indicated into later summer. The market then expected to reach 962 even over the following 2 to 3 months, where a high into next spring can be placed. And August feeder cattle settled at 133 okay. half. There's a big weekly channel top at 132 and a quarter that we settled above today on a daily basis. But because it goes back a full year, it's been holding high since early May. If we can settle Friday above 132 and a quarter, this market actually looks really good over the next 3 to 5 months. I would expect the 156 handle over that time horizon, where the broader feeder cattle market can actually top out into next year. But downside, if we close Friday below 132 and a quarter, which we have been closing below that formation since the May high, it still remains susceptible to falling back into later summer, 117 even, then in reach over the next month or two, where the broader feeder market can actually bottom out into autumn trade.
Wow.
And that's what I got there.
Yeah, we got a little bit of time. Have you got an update for me on August hogs?
August hogs, okay. I still remain bearish below 53.40 near term, still expecting over the next few weeks 42.70, and that's a long-term trend line that actually held the lows in early April. So 42.70 can absorb selling really through the balance of the year. I turn bullish into later July if we can close Friday above 53.40, which looks like a long shot right now, having settled at 48.45, but if we can close Friday above 53.40, then 66 even here we come within about 3 to 5 weeks, and that's a longer term resistance area that can actually contain buying into autumn trade.
Okay. Boy, yeah, you made me sorry for asking when you said that 42.70. I feel better about 66 bucks. Still not good, but it's a whole lot better than 42.70.
Yeah, well, all right, another 6 handles lower. All right, very good, Chip. Thanks
a lot.
That's right.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you. That is Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. Don't forget that Kerry has a 2-week free trial waiting for you at Artak Advisory. That's A-R-T-A-C advisory.com. Okay, National Weather Service, 6 to 10-day outlook, July 5th through the 9th. Man, starting to knock on the door of pollination here, and we've got above-normal temperatures expected across the entire Corn Belt. Now, the area that has the highest odds of above-normal temperatures includes eastern South Dakota, northeast Nebraska, northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, all of Wisconsin, northern Illinois, northern Indiana, northern Ohio, all of Michigan. 70% odds of above normal temperatures in that area. Now it drops down to 60% and then 50%, but even the 50% odds of above normal temperatures covers the heart of the Corn Belt. I'm talking about 72 to 74% of the acres is what I would guess, something like that. Below normal precipitation expected July 5th through the 9th through much of the Corn Belt, all of Illinois, call it all of Indiana, Ohio, corn areas of Michigan. Southern Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, Southern Nebraska, all in that area that are expected to see below normal precipitation. Then there's a band of normal precip before you get to the above normal precip in the Red River Valley of Minnesota, northern South Dakota, and North Dakota. Jump out to the 8 to 14 day. Above normal temperatures expected over the entire Corn Belt once again. At least 60% odds of above normal temperatures expected over the heart of the Corn Belt. So obviously that is something that we're watching. This is for July 7th through the 13th. We're getting even closer to the to pollination period. Below normal precipitation through Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, then back through Missouri, Oklahoma. So we're talking about a high percentage, more than half of the acres, 60% of the acres of corn are expected to see below normal precipitation in that time period. So there's the old story. You try to rush it up to pollination, get it there a little earlier than normal with some slightly above normal temperatures, but you got to have that normal rain coming along with it. And then after that, which we're going to be starting to talk about, that post-pollination period, that's when you want to start to cool things off and slow down your kernel fill so that you can maximize the amount of dry matter that you're accumulating. All right, for Davis and for producer Joe Stackler, thanks for listening today. Tomorrow morning, we're going to learn more about the Growing Climate Solutions Act. And tomorrow afternoon, Davis and I will have the details of the reports.